The headlines for this hour: Israel has killed more than 700 children in its ongoing onslaught on the besieged Gaza Strip amid silence of its Western allies. Hamas Political Bureau Chief Ismail Haniyeh says Israel's plot to evacuate people of Gaza is doomed to fail as Palestinians will not leave their homeland. And Iran has warned that the continuation of Israeli crimes against Palestinians will change the situation in the entire region. Thank you for joining us. In today's top story, the Israeli regime keeps pounding the densely populated Gaza Strip relentlessly for the eighth day in a row, killing civilians and reducing buildings in the besieged Palestinian territory to rubble. In one of the latest strikes, the regime killed 27 Palestinians in Jabalia, north of the Gaza Strip. Around 2,300 Palestinians have been killed and nearly 10,000 wounded. Over 700 children are amongst the dead. At least 15 hospitals have been damaged by the Israeli shelling and air raids. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas says at least 21 Israelis and foreigners held by the group were also killed in the airstrikes. The attacks began last Saturday. More than 420,000 Gazans have been displaced since then. Now more than 1 million Palestinians in northern Gaza face an Israeli deadline on Saturday to flee south. The territory remains under Israel's complete siege, with no access to electricity, water, food and medicines. Hamas chief Ismail Haniyeh has accused Israel of committing war crimes and preventing humanitarian aid from entering Gaza. As part of its Operation Al-Aqsa flood against Israel, Hamas has been firing thousands of missiles into the occupied territories. The Palestinian resistance movement has now carried out the farthest launch since its military campaign began on Saturday. Palestinians say Ayash 250 was fired at Israel's northern command base in the city of Safed. Israeli media claim it was intercepted by the regime's missile systems. Sirens were sounded all the way from the settlements close to the Gaza Strip to cities such as Haifa. The missile has a range of 250 kilometers. Hamas had previously stated that it can target anywhere in the Israeli-occupied territories. So far, over 1,500 Israelis have been killed and 3,400 injured in Operation Al-Aqsa flood by the resistance group. Hamas says it launched a military campaign in response to repeated Israeli desecration of the Al-Aqsa Mosque and the regime's crimes and aggression throughout the decades. Sderot, an Israeli settlement close to the Gaza Strip, has been one of the places where fighters from the resistance movement Hamas could infiltrate last week during the Al-Aqsa flood operation. Al-Alam Press Corps has toured the settlement following the Hamas lightning operation.
We are here in the Sderot settlement near the besieged Gaza Strip, which has been subjected to heavy Israeli strikes. Now, of course, many of the settlers have left this area after it was targeted by a barrage of rockets. You can see lots of material damage here, including two cars and buildings, and it happened at a time when there were a lot of settlers here. Sderot was hit by lots of rockets and missiles, and resistance fighters were present here when they started their Al-Aqsa flood operation. After heavy fighting, the Israeli army took back the control of this area. You see the damage inflicted to houses. A settlement that was once housing many settlers has now turned into a deserted town thanks to the rockets fired by resistance forces. There are now only military forces here. Still, rockets and missiles are being fired toward this area, rockets that are in response to the Israeli regime's crimes against Gaza. The Gaza envelope is still being targeted by rockets and missiles fired by resistance forces. There has also been sporadic fighting in the area, which demonstrates that the regime still does not have full control over all places in the Gaza envelope. The Israeli army is trying to once again bring it back under its full control, while regime intelligence forces have declared it a dangerous zone.
Head of Hamas Political Bureau Ismail Haniyeh says Palestinian people will never leave their land despite the recent Israeli bloodshed in the besieged Gaza Strip. Haniyeh said Palestinians have a country and their country is Palestine. Hamas officials said the people of Palestine will not emigrate from their land despite the Israeli regime's barbaric crimes to eliminate the roots of the Palestinian people. Haniyeh said the return of the Palestinian people to their ancestral land is close, given that the regime's plan, which is assisted by the U.S., is doomed to fail. He praised the military wing of Hamas, the Al-Qassam Brigades, for carrying out the operation against the Israeli regime.
The scenes out of the Gaza Strip are nothing short than a massacre. The hospital there is on its last breath, like the patients. Meanwhile, the Israeli military has ordered the evacuation of more than 1 million people from northern Gaza to, quote, temporarily move south to mitigate civilian harm. The UN has condemned this move, warning against devastating humanitarian consequences, warning that the evacuation was simply not possible.
Moving more than 1 million people across a densely populated war zone to a place with no food, water, or accommodation, when the entire territory is under siege, is extremely dangerous and in some cases simply not possible.
The Palestinian UN envoy had harsher words, urging the UN chief to stop Israel's crimes against humanity.
Stop this carnage of civilians.
Israel's UN ambassador, meanwhile, criticized the UN response to Israel's warning. The UN should be praising Israel for these precautionary actions, he said. For years, the UN has put its head in the sand in the face of Hamas's terror buildup in Gaza. This coming from a regime that has never heeded any UN resolutions, or international law for that matter, and has been called a child killer. The stats here speak for themselves.
More than 150,000 Palestinian civilians have been killed or injured in Gaza and the West Bank since 2008. 33,000 of those were children.
This is what Israel has in mind: the creation of two evacuation routes to the south of Barakah, which Israel has said will not be the target of Israeli attacks. Hamas has rejected that outright. There are fears that Israel is trying to bring people to the streets with the aim of creating gatherings and then taking casualties, something it has done in previous wars. Meanwhile, behind the scenes, it is reported that the U.S. Secretary of State, Antony Blinken, is negotiating with Persian Gulf Arab countries to convince them to accept the residents of the Gaza Strip. He has said that it is because the Israeli army is getting ready to raise Gaza to the ground. The expression "to raise to the ground" is one that Blinken used exactly. The plan is to transfer 1 million citizens to Egypt and then distribute them to Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Qatar, and the United Arab Emirates.
The Israeli bombardment of Gaza would not have been possible without Washington's all-out support. The bombs dropping on Gaza have been provided by the U.S. Washington is as guilty, if not more, in enabling Israel to carry out its bombing campaign. There is a possibility that the USS Gerald Ford will assist Israel in razing Gaza to the ground.
What Israel has in mind is to prepare for a block-by-block warfare in Gaza. Israel has already stated that the goal is to destroy Hamas, disregarding the human costs, which may include the ones in captivity. And that includes Israeli soldiers' lives as well. The resistance fighters can use their tunnel network to get in behind the attack or to attack in all directions, to make it very difficult for Israel to effectively have an advantage. At the end, the U.S. and a U.S.-supported coalition will help Israel demolish the Gaza Strip, which the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has stated. The U.S. would do that through its aircraft carrier, the Gerald Ford, along with the U.K., who has sent surveillance aircraft. But not so fast. Hamas itself has plenty of firepower left in its arsenal, from drones to missiles and its fighters. And there are other players in this battle as well, who are willing and even more able to defeat the enemy forces. Hezbollah and a squadron of fighters, for one, who has said that it would act when deemed necessary. Israel's ultimate goal is a greater Israel. One needs to look at where the American forces are located. from the west of Iraq on the Euphrates border and east of the Euphrates of Syria. But if it comes down to that, there is one formidable force standing in their way, the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Iran's foreign minister warns that the situation in the region will not remain the same if the Israeli regime's crimes against Palestinians continue. Amir Abdullahian made the remarks during a meeting with his Qatari counterpart, Mohammed Abdulrahman Athani, in Doha. The Iranian top diplomat said Israel's killings in Gaza cannot be tolerated. He said the siege of the Gaza Strip and withholding food, water and electricity must be ended. For his part, the Qatari foreign minister stressed the importance of consultations between the two nations. He expressed concern about the situation in the Gaza Strip and the continuation of the Israeli aggression. Amir Abdullahian also met with head of the Hamas political bureau, Ismail Haniyeh, behind closed doors. He has engaged in a diplomatic tour of West Asian countries focused on the Israeli strikes on the Gaza Strip. He has already visited Iraq, Lebanon and Syria and met with high-ranking officials there. Now, to talk more on this, I think we are joined by Mr. Christopher Halali, researcher and political analyst from Verschaire, Vermont. Hi, sir. Now, let's begin with this, with the significance and implications of the Iranian foreign minister's diplomatic tour of West Asia, his visits to Iraq, Lebanon, Syria and Qatar, and having met with high-ranking officials there, and also on him calling on Israel to stop or immediately stop the inhumane attacks on Gaza, or it could face, quote, a huge earthquake of resistance.
I think it's very important. I think it's, you know, you have to understand here that the Iranian foreign minister and Iran overall are taking a very important step diplomatically to ensure that the situation doesn't spill over, that the region doesn't erupt, and taking a very diplomatic road, but of course leaving open the possibility of resistance. Because, of course, what is going on in Gaza to the Palestinian people is nothing short of genocidal. And if the West can claim and speak about genocide as a pretext for military operations and confrontation, Iran, as a regional power, has an obligation to protect also the citizens in Gaza. And so I think what's going on here is very important, very critical. It shows a new role for Iran in the region as the United States has slowly withdrawn from the surrounding areas, and it shows that Iran is taking its responsibility very seriously in consulting with Iraq, with Syria, with Lebanon, and with Qatar. And I think that what's happening here is a situation that could escalate dramatically, and Iran is making it very clear, not only to these governments, but also to the Israelis and the Western governments, that there are red lines that cannot be crossed. And so I think it's very important what's happening. And I think, of course, the situation on the ground in Gaza requires this type of diplomatic response and these consultations to happen quickly with effect. And, of course, if there is no effect diplomatically, all options are on the table, as the Americans always say.
Mr. Halali, what about some of the Arab or Muslim countries, the UN, the Arab League, the Organization of Islamic Cooperation? What happened to these?
Sadly and regrettably, a lot of them are aligned with the West, are maybe too afraid of what could happen to them. Maybe they are too nervous about Washington's retaliation for siding with the Palestinians. You know, in speaking with many comrades today, I had consultations with some members of the PLO and on a meeting online. And what they said was, we are shocked by the silence of the Arab nations. We are shocked by the silence of many of the people who claim to support us but are now silent. And I think this is due in part to Washington's coercive power, not only militarily, but also economically and politically. And so you have certain Arab governments, certain regimes in the region that have not even lifted the finger to help in Palestine, especially the situation in Gaza. And I think that it shows who is on the side of freedom and liberation. It is those who continue to fight against imperialism, against colonialism, against Zionism. And that would be, of course, the regional power of the Islamic Republic of Iran and its allies in the region, the so-called Axis of Resistance. Because the other grouping in the region are the lackeys of the West. And that's the real split that you see today. And the silence is indicative of where they truly stand in relation to the Palestinians' plight.
On that note, I would like to thank Mr. Helali for joining us, researcher and political analyst from Wershire, Vermont. Thank you, sir. Now moving on, rallies have been held in various parts of the world in solidarity with Palestinians as the Israeli regime continues with its brutal aggression against the besieged Gaza Strip. In London, tens of thousands of people rallied in the British capital to express support for the Palestinians. They held signs and chanted slogans as they marched from the BBC headquarters to Downing Street. Demonstrators called for an end to the Israeli bloodshed in Gaza. In Uppsala, Sweden, protesters called on the international community to take action and stop Israel's crimes. In the Iraqi city of Nineveh, people gathered to condemn Israel and its allies for killing Palestinians. They hailed the Operation Al-Aqsa flood launched by the Hamas resistance movement. Similar rallies were held in French capital Paris, in the Italian city of Milan, and the Turkish city of Istanbul. With that, we come to the end of this bulletin. Thank you for listening. Take care and bye-bye for now.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight. In a classic case of blaming the victim and brazenly whitewashing the Zionist regime's atrocities, many world leaders have again jumped in defense of the apartheid. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Press TV noted, since the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas launched its military operation on the occupied territories, in retaliation for incessant violations of the Al-Aqsa Mosque, the international community has rushed to reaffirm their support for the apartheid Zionist regime. Since the operation was launched, more than 1,000 Zionist troops and settlers have been killed, and hundreds more are held in the besieged Gaza Strip as war prisoners. The Zionist regime's indiscriminate bombardment of civilian areas in the coastal strip has also resulted in death of hundreds of Palestinians, all of them civilians, unlike the targets in occupied territories. The Zionist regime has also intensified its blockade of the Gaza Strip, cutting off water and electricity, and relentlessly attacking civilian areas and residential buildings. The blockade has left the 2.3 million people living in the area largely cut off from the outside world. However, world leaders have turned a blind eye to the Zionist regime's occupation, crippling siege, and daily atrocities against Palestinians, dubbing the Palestinian resistance as terrorist groups. U.S. President Joe Biden, reacting to recent developments, pledged rock-solid support for Benjamin Netanyahu, calling the Palestinian operation terrorist assault. Biden claimed in a statement, "I made clear to Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu that we stand ready to offer all appropriate means of support to the government and people of Israel. Terrorism is never justified. Israel has a right to defend itself and its people." He conveniently forgot what the fabricated Zionist regime of Israel has been doing in the occupied territories for 7 decades and continues to murder Palestinians, including women and children, with impunity. The U.S. president also forgot what the regime in Tel Aviv did to Shirin Abu Akleh, a Palestinian-American journalist who was killed in cold blood in broad daylight in the occupied West Bank city of Jenin last year. No one was punished for the murder. Late on Saturday, October 7th, Nikki Haley, former U.S. ambassador to the UN and a Republican presidential candidate, also sent a message to Netanyahu on Fox News, telling him to finish them, meaning Hamas. The hawkish Republican said in the interview, sounding completely hysterical, "Finish them, finish them. They should have hell to pay for what they have just done." Haley's statement generated intense social media debate, with many ex or former Twitter users slamming her for making a provocative remark. Some users even urged the ex-chief, Elon Musk, to suspend her account. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken, in a statement, said, "The world should be revolted with the developments in Palestine," referring to the Hamas operation. He wrote in an X post, without even mentioning Palestinians murdered by the Zionist regime, "We unequivocally condemn the appalling attacks by Hamas against Israel. We stand in solidarity with the government and people of Israel and extend our condolences for the Israeli lives lost in these attacks." Recently, he wrote that he had spoken to the Israeli regime foreign minister, Eli Cohen, on how the U.S. is supporting Israel as it defends itself against Hamas terrorist attack and reaffirmed efforts to secure the immediate release of all hostages, he claimed. The top American diplomat needs to be reminded of thousands of Palestinians languishing in Zionist regime's jails without any charge for no crime under the so-called draconian administrative detention policy. Europeans also jumped on the bandwagon, defending the indefensible. Ursula von der Leyen, president of the European Union Commission, in an ex post, defended the child-murdering regime's right to defend itself, saying the operation has left them breathless. Recently, British Prime Minister Rishi Sunak also pledged his country's steadfast support to the Zionist regime. His office, Downing Street 10, also flashed the flag of the Zionist regime as a mark of solidarity. He offered to provide diplomatic intelligence or security support to the regime in Tel Aviv if requested, and said the UK stood poised to help the fabricated regime of Israel militarily if it asked for resistance. French President Emmanuel Macron, in a post in Hebrew recently on his X account, also voiced support for the Zionist regimes, as he claimed the right to defend themselves. German Chancellor Olaf Scholz made similar comments in a statement recently and addressed Israelis, saying Germany is on their side. Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi also took to X and labeled the operation as a terrorist attack, saying India stands in solidarity with the Zionist regime. Modi's post was accompanied by several other posts by Hindu Tuva cheerleaders in India, who pledged support for the Zionist regime, prompting many to link Zionism with India's militant Hindutva. Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky also said Israel has an indisputable right to defend itself. According to the United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, OCHA, which has been tracking deaths in the occupied territories since 2008, more than 6,400 Palestinians, including more than 1,400 children, were killed by the Zionist regime up to September 19, 2023. More than 152,000 Palestinians have been injured since 2008 up to September 21, 2023. But while the killing of Israeli settlers, legitimate and warranted, draws anger and outrage from the Western regimes, the cold-blooded murder of Palestinians every single day has been normalized.
Food for thought.
Hello everyone, and here is some wonderful food for thought from Imam Ali al-Naghi al-Hadi, peace be upon him, the 10th infallible successor of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. Better than the good deed is the doer, and nicer than the nice utterance is the one who utters. More virtuous than knowledge is the one who has the knowledge. And worse than evil is the evil doer. And uglier than terror is the one who terrifies.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction into Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, do good, it will be multiplied in your Islamic lifestyle. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, it is an honor to be here at your presence, dear brothers and sisters. We're talking about Islamic lifestyle and how our good deeds will be multiplied in our Islamic lifestyle. So what's interesting is that the Almighty Allah, out of His compassion, His mercy, His grace, all of these good, beautiful, positive attributes that we have of the Almighty Allah, which you should go and check out. Because of all of these beautiful attributes of the Almighty Allah, we find that He has said Himself that for every good action, He will multiply it 10 times. But for every evil action, Allah will only count it once. And so it's interesting, we find in numerous places of the Holy Quran that the Almighty Allah says that whoever brings a virtue shall receive 10 times its like, but whoever brings vice shall not be requited except with its like, and they will not be wronged. Subhanallah, here the Almighty Allah we see is directly telling us that, listen, if you do a good deed, we're going to multiply it 10 times. But if you do a bad deed, we'll only count it at once. So what a beautiful way of helping us and encouraging us to do good deeds. And on the other hand, what a beautiful way of encouraging us to ask for forgiveness, because it will be easier to ask for forgiveness and to be forgiven by the Almighty Allah as compared to, you know, not asking for forgiveness. We continue the discussion after the break. Welcome back. This is A to Z on IRIB English Radio. So we were talking about how Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, He multiplies our good deeds 10 times and He counts our sins as once. And so both, this is encouraging us to go and commit good deeds, do good actions, live that Islamic lifestyle, and at the same time to help us to not commit evil deeds. And if perchance we have unfortunately committed evil deeds, that we can ask for forgiveness and realize that it is relatively easy to be forgiven, especially when it comes to, you know, the good deeds and the bad deeds when we compare them to one another. And so again, the reduction of committing sins in our Islamic lifestyle, doing good deeds in our Islamic lifestyle. And how beautiful it is that when we commit a good deed, when we do a good thing, when we follow the commandments of the Almighty Allah, when we obey the Almighty Allah, that we are being rewarded 10 times for that which we are doing. And on the other hand, you know, because we do commit sins and sometimes we might, you know, lose control and commit more sins than we should be, well, it's okay if you ask for forgiveness, if you make amends, if you make a change, the Almighty Allah will forgive you. And so in our Islamic lifestyle, it's very important to remember to continue to do as many good deeds as we can and to reduce the amount of sins that we commit, but also to ask for forgiveness as soon as we can so that our sins are forgiven, our good deeds are increased in our Islamic lifestyle.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
the war on the Gaza Strip.
Part 2.
While we were with Abu Ramadan's family in the house, we heard explosions everywhere, every now and then.
There was another explosion. That one hit someplace moments ago and exploded. We do not know where that was. May Allah protect all the people and children. Sometimes planes hit us and sometimes tanks. What did we do to them? Can you see the fire in a Shujaiya neighborhood? They killed the people and burned the houses. Allah is sufficient for us against the Israeli occupation. Look at the sky. It is black because of the fire and of what they fire on us. They are cowards and could not go out of their tanks. Their chiefs tell them to kill themselves but not surrender to the Palestinians. They tell them that they should not be imprisoned. Kill yourselves but do not turn yourselves in. They and their army are cowards. They fire missiles and kill innocent people and hit hospitals and mosques. They destroyed every mosque.
Abu Ramadan and his family did not want to stay any longer inside the house, so they decided to leave before something disastrous happened.
Let's go out as they may bomb the house. Let's go to the school. Planes are firing missiles all day and night. Listen to the sounds of the planes and tanks.
Because of the continuous heavy shelling and the fear of becoming a target, all family members rushed to the sheltering school, thinking that their whole house would be bombed at any moment, because Gazans know that drone missiles are guided missiles of the F-16 fighters, which could destroy their house.
We're afraid that they bomb it and destroy it. We do not belong to Hamas or to Fatah, but may Allah protect them. We support everybody. All the Muslims are our children. My son and his wife were in the apartment during that. What shall we do?
They targeted the mosque while the prayers were inside. Mosques and churches did not survive the bombings. They destroyed everything and no one is safe. Why is that? Is it because we have what is their right? Or because we want to live dignified on our land and in our homeland like other nations? The right of this land is ours and they took it. Where is our land that they took?
Inside the sheltering school, which houses tens of the expelled families from Al-Shuja'iyah and Al-Zaytun neighborhoods, people are living moments of waiting and fear. Some are watching the planes in the sky, while others are following the smoke coming out because of the continuous shelling in the Gaza Strip. Others could not enter the classes. They prefer to stay out in the corridors or the school square because the classes are crowded with women and children.
Four families live in one classroom. Our family, Al-Ghazali family, Al-Dahshan family, and Arafat family. There is no enough room in the refugee schools, but we should support each other.
My husband and I have three children. We are now in the streets. My husband and I sleep on one mattress. In this class, there are about 40 people, including children and elders, and the number keeps on rising.
This is what the image looks like inside the school. The displaced families from the eastern borders of the Strip live inside the school. When the sunset is close, people start to make movements. Everyone is busy preparing the requirements to break their fast, gathering some food and drinks. The same is for Abu Ramadan and his family. To the sounds of explosions, the fasting people break their Ramadan fast. Some of them have their meals inside the classrooms, while others eat in the corridors because there is not enough space.
They have started bombing now. They will continue this the whole night. We could not sleep last night, and I'm still awake till now.
We took refuge at the UNRWA schools because they provide protection in wartime. We're not supposed to be bombed there. However, we may be hit in this UNRWA school. They fire random missiles and don't care what they are hitting.
There is a bombing every second. I was once going to the bathroom when a missile shrapnel fell next to me. My children have urinary incontinence because of fear.
After breaking their fast, the men gathered in a circle in the corridor. They started discussing what happened in the country.
They are killing children, women, and innocent people. They killed children from Shuhaiber family while they were playing on the roof.
Yes, I know them. Two girls and a boy.
They targeted them.
And they killed people who were fleeing from Al-Mansura.
What did they do? What was their fault?
70 people were killed today, but there is nothing to justify that.
They were children. What was their fault? We want to live like other nations, like the rest of the world. Every 2 or 3 years comes a new war, and they kill young men.
They creatively kill children and cut trees. They destroy buildings too. Are they humans even?
The whole world is silent.
If they want to be creative, they should send their soldiers man to man in the battlefield. It is not by using planes to kill children, women, and the old people.
What is the fault of those who are being killed? What is the fault of the children? Do children fire rockets?
They say that children fire rockets. So drone rockets cut the children's necks off their bodies because these children fire rockets.
Yesterday in Shajaiya, they bombed many houses. What was the people's fault? F-16 rockets destroy huge buildings upon their residence. Why?
Yes, Al-Bash family and Abu Kawar family, for example.
During the discussion, they heard the Al-Isha call prayer in Gaza, along with the sounds of the Israeli army's F-16 planes bombing everywhere. Despite their fear and horror, the men gathered in the school square to perform the Isha prayers, asking Allah to protect them.
Say, I seek refuge in the Lord of mankind, the King of mankind, the God of mankind, from the evil of sneaking whisperer who whispers evil into the hearts of mankind, from among the jinn and evil men. God is great. God listens to the one who praises him. O Allah, we ask you to make the Mujahideen's shots true. O Allah, put horror into the corrupted hearts of the Zionists. O Allah, we ask you to bring their planes down, to destroy their tanks, and put fear in the hearts of their soldiers. O Allah, we ask you to paralyze their attack. Peace be upon the Prophet Muhammad and his companions. God is great.
After finishing the prayers, sounds of firecrackers and takbir were heard over the school. Everybody was smiling and was delighted in spite of the killing and destruction. Obviously, there was good news that spread. After 450 martyrs and more than 3,000 injuries up until that day were the result of the ongoing war by the Israeli occupation of the Gaza Strip.
The Palestinians captured an Israeli soldier. I hope they capture another one tonight. This is victory for us. We will free all our prisoners and get all our demands with this soldier.
We did not want to imprison the soldier, but they themselves made us kidnap him. We did not want that from the beginning, but they made us do so.
After the celebration, there were more explosions and raids, but everyone went to sleep in the school. At dawn, Abu Ramadan woke up to start a new day with unknown surprises.
There is bombing and destruction every day. They have been bombing Al-Shaja'iya neighborhood the whole night and everybody left it. There are many martyrs. Houses were destroyed and men, children and old men were killed. What life is this?
A new morning comes to the Gaza Strip, while the war of destroying houses on its residents continues.
Life is full of choices. Choose the best option. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
The rate of gun deaths among children in the U.S. grew 87% over past decade. Since 2020, firearms have been the leading cause of death in children in the United States. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Truthout wrote, a newly published study finds pediatric deaths due to gun violence in the U.S. have dramatically increased over the past decade, with researchers noting that not enough is being done to address the horrifying trend. The study, authored by Rebecca Mannix and Mark Newman, pediatric emergency medicine physicians at Boston Children's Hospital, as well as by Cordelia Mannix, Rebecca Mannix's high school-aged daughter, found that 2,590 people under the age of 18 died due to firearm-related incidents in 2021. That number was an 87% increase from the 1,311 who died due to firearms in 2011. Around two-thirds of the deaths were homicides, while around 30% were suicides, the study found. Those rates are consistent with other studies that arrived at similar numbers, with a smaller percentage being attributed to accidental discharge of firearms. The study also analyzed other causes of premature death in children and found that vehicular fatalities, once the most common type of premature death among kids, had declined significantly over the past 10 years. The decrease was attributable to an increase in preventive changes taken on car safety over that time, including changes to state laws on booster seats, the standardization of airbags in most vehicles, and other actions. Unfortunately, the opposite is happening with firearms, said the study's lead author, Rebecca Mannix, adding, it's just getting worse and kids are dying at higher rates from firearms. Mannix emphasized, as a society, we've done less. But what we've missed is that the most lethal means of injury are still incredibly accessible to kids. Since 2020, firearms have been the leading cause of death in children in the United States. Tony Gross, the medical director of the emergency department at Children's Hospital New Orleans, told the New York Times that the trend could change if the gun industry took proactive measures to prevent gun violence. However, the industry has not signed on to making safety modifications, including fingerprint identification on firearms, that could limit the number of child deaths per year. A separate analysis of firearm-related deaths in children, published by the American Academy of Pediatrics in August, suggested that the number of pediatric firearm deaths is much higher, with around 4,752 children dying from a firearm in 2021. It said, this is undoubtedly one of our chief public health crises in this country. The most likely reason that your child will die in this country, the United States, is at the hands of a firearm. That's not acceptable. According to the New York Times, the recent findings underscore additional data showing that firearm injuries are now the leading cause of death among Americans under 20. After excluding deaths of infants born prematurely or with congenital abnormalities, some 2,590 children and teenagers under the age of 18 died of firearm injuries in 2021, up from 1,311 in 2011, according to this study, which was published in the journal Pediatrics. In other industrialized countries, guns are not even among the top three causes of death for children. Drug poisonings among children younger than 18 more than doubled, and suffocations increased by 12.5%, the researchers also found.
Water resources won't last long.
Part 2.
a relatively hot day in the fall of 2017. That day in the small town of Zagora in southern Morocco could have ended in peace quietly like any other day. But that day wasn't like the other days in the desert in Morocco. People in the desert region had gathered from different areas for something important in Zagora. At a first glance, you'd think that they were protesting against planting watermelon in that region and exporting it to other countries. I mean, it was just a small protest for better working and living conditions. But after a short while, 23 of the protesters who were there in small numbers were arrested in a police raid, and the others quickly scattered. Apparently, the protests were over, but the livelihood of the people in that region was dependent on buying bottles of water, because the water in the wells had dried up, so they couldn't drink water and do agriculture. Exporting watermelon to Europe would further reduce the level of underground water resources in that region, so they couldn't stand to watch it. In no time, the protests became more complicated. Morocco is about 710,000 square kilometers located in the Western Sahara in North Africa. Rabat is the capital city and Casablanca is the largest city. Since its establishment in 780 BC, Morocco has seen many monarchs and rulers, from the Portuguese occupation of a swath of the land in the 15th century to resistance against the Ottoman occupation and becoming the only country in North Africa that refused to be under the domination of the Ottoman Empire. From 1980 to mid-2010, Morocco used over 70% of non-renewable water resources for agriculture. The statistics showed that it will fall below the abject drought line until the mid-2020s. But why would officials opt for products that require a lot of water while they're aware that the country is located in a desert and providing water has always been a major challenge? But the condition to protect the stability was to continue extracting water in large volumes and keep parching the land. Insisting on keeping the status quo would shroud the future of the country and foreign investment in ambiguity. On the one hand, the country's stability was at risk, and on the other hand, the government would blame the drought for everything. It wouldn't admit that its decisions were influenced by the structure and plans inherited from the colonial era. Syria's underground water resources were drained during those years. Although Syria has gone through different spells of drought throughout history, rising temperatures of the earth has unprecedentedly escalated the impacts of the drought in recent years. About 70% of the cattle in the region have perished. In 2010, wheat production in Syria was reduced by 18%, and 3 million residents of northeastern Syria are food insecure amid the famine. Farmers